Good morning, everybody. Dave Weiner here. It's September. My God, it's already September of 2011. Never mind what the day is. How the hell did this happen? I mean, my God, it's September 3rd, 2011. And Monday, today's Saturday. Monday is Labor Day, and after that, summer's over. And, man, what a... It's just whizzing by. I can't say... but it's interesting times. Let's see, where we leave off. I wrote a piece yesterday. Was it yesterday? It was yesterday. And the title of the piece is Arrington is the Future of What We Used to Call Journalism. And, it's a new, instance of a piece that I've been writing now for, 15 years, and a few things are happening at the same time. I'm figuring out more. Well, first of all, the world is moving forward, and the basic model of publishing that came about that made this whole thread interesting has progressed. I mean, it's the first piece I probably wrote was like in 1994, the end of 94, which would be 16 years ago. Wow, unbelievable. Is that right? Yeah, 16. Almost 16 years ago. And the switch that flipped for me was up until that point, if I wanted to tell a story to the world, I had to find a way to publish that story on paper, and it had to be distributed geographically at least all over the United States. And well, we were distributing software to Europe and to the Far East, and so probably to those places too. And it was beyond my means to do that. I didn't have the resources to, I mean, yeah, I suppose I actually did. If I wanted to publish a newsletter, I could have done that, but it was not, and, you know, I'm sure the thought had come up, but and I had, of course, been sending emails to people, because, well, had been sending emails since the 70s when I was a grad student, using what was not then known as the internet, but really actually was the internet. You know, I loved email, it was wonderful, but I never thought of email as a publishing platform. And that was the epiphany. I had a combination of things. I had a scripting environment that could send emails. That was a big deal. And so if I had a database with a list of people that I wanted that were subscribers, who for the first incarnation I volunteered them as subscribers, I didn't ask them if they wanted to be. This was before spam, so like nobody seemed to mind. If they did, I took them off. I mean, I just was very liberal about if you don't want it, just say the word, I'm taking you off, you know. And a few people did ask to be taken off. For the most part, they didn't. And after doing a couple of these, it was like, it just hit me. Wow. I mean, I could say anything I want. I don't have to convince anybody. That was the big deal. I don't have to get my idea accepted. Nobody has to understand what I'm saying. It's entirely up to me to decide whether or not it goes out. And that was, now I had this experience before. When I was a high school student, I, with two other friends, had started a newspaper, not school authorized, just something we did on our own, for exactly the same idea. It was like, I don't want anybody telling me what I can write, and so I will just do the whole thing myself. Only this was on a whole nother scale. I mean, I was actually having influence with this. I mean, the moment of when I realized how much influence it was having was when the CEO of Apple, this is before Steve Jobs came back, while Steve Jobs was gone, his name was Michael Spindler, was being interviewed in the San Jose Mercury News, which was the local newspaper in Silicon Valley, and not the only one, but the biggest one. And he said, the reporter had asked him a question, and he didn't like the question. He says, "You've been listening to Dave Weiner too much." Or I'm paraphrasing. All I know was my name was in there, and it was not said in the most happy way. Which, to somebody who's trying to get the attention of the people running a company, in this case, Apple was certainly one of the people, one of the companies I was trying to get the attention of. There's, I mean, no better confirmation that you're actually getting through than to read in print the reaction of the person you're trying to reach. It didn't do any good, but, it, you know, I knew it was getting through. And I've written this piece over and over and over again. And in the demonstration now, back then, what people thought was I was building a business. And the business that I was building was a newsletter business. So that at the time, the newsletters, popular newsletters, were from Stuart Alsop and Esther Dyson. And they thought, well, he's getting ready to go into competition with them. But that wasn't what I was doing. And I said to them, that's not what I was doing. Why would I want to put a tariff on my on the dissemination of my ideas? The thing that I was getting off on was that here's this way to get my ideas out without anybody in between me and the reader. And that was the big thing. So now I'm having an email exchange with Matthew Ingram, who I want to say up front, really respect the work he's been doing at GigaOM. When he writes an article, I pretty much stop everything and read it, and I usually find that they're insightful and interesting. And but he wrote a piece yesterday that that was like the thing that I didn't like, which and it was so meta. It's on so many levels a demonstration of the problem in the piece that he was writing that it can be very difficult to discuss it. I wrote a piece that, called "Arrington is the Future of What We Used to Call Journalism," and I'll read you the paragraph here. This is paragraph number 2 in there. It says, "Journalism itself is becoming obsolete. I know the reporters don't want to hear this. They're likely to blast me, yada, yada, yada. I happen to think that journalism was a response to publishing being expensive. It cost a lot of money to push bits around the net before there was a net. They had to have huge capital-intensive printing plants, fleets of trucks, delivery boys with paper routes. Now we can hear directly from the sources and build our own news networks. It's still early days for this, but it wasn't that long ago that we depended on journalists for news. But in a generation or two, we won't be employing people to gather news for us. It will work differently." Now, what Ingram concluded from this was the, how to put it without, I mean, I'll just be straight about it. This is what the journalist thinks I'm saying. He thinks I'm saying that now anybody can do what a journalist does. And I'm not saying that. I'm not saying it in the way he means it, okay? That's why it gets so complicated. Because I don't know what he means by that, right? If he means that I will do what a journalist does for free and then other people will read what I'm doing, no, I don't think that's what's going to happen. I don't think anybody's going to be willing to do that for free. I mean, maybe occasionally that'll happen, but that's not likely to happen. On the other hand, if what he means is that I will do that for myself, in other words, I will have the sources who I respect, who are not journalists. They're not assembling other people's points of view. I mean, what is a all this comes down to is what is a journalist and what does a journalist do, right? I mean, you need to tell me that. I'll tell you what I think a journalist does, okay? And you tell me where you think I'm wrong, And don't give me a vague answer like, oh, there's something mystical about it, because that's no answer. We're trying to get pragmatic about it. What actually does a journalist do? Okay? Because if you want to know if other people are going to do it, then first you need to know what it is that a journalist does. Okay, so what a journalist does is somehow gets it in his or her head that I want to do a story. Okay? Now, how they arrive at this, at probably a lot of different routes. Some source could suggest that there might be a story here. An editor might say, hey, why don't you go have a look at this? I think there might be a story in this. What they don't like to admit, but happens more often than not, is a competitor of theirs writes a story and they say, oh, I need to write that story myself. However they get there, what happens then is that the reporter gets on the phone or gets on the web and starts reading what other people have said about this or think about it, and makes phone calls and asks people, what do you think about this? And interviews, like, say, a dozen people. Okay, while they're interviewing them, they take notes in one of those narrow notepads, and they're just writing away all the things, you know. This is, in theory, I think most of the time they're actually daydreaming, they're not actually listening to what you're saying, based on the accuracy of the quotes, okay, because I don't know, if they were listening to me, how did they hear that, okay? And if you go back to 1994, why was I so excited about getting my ideas out there? It's because the reporters weren't doing very good at getting my ideas out there. They would change them. They would not understand them. They would take the words and reassemble them like a ransom note to mean something completely different from what I think. I would end up reading my own quotes saying, hey, what an idiot, and oh my God, that's me. Right? Not a great positive thing. So, okay, so a reporter takes down all these notes. Then they maybe they spend some time thinking, well, what did I find out here? What was the real story? You'd like to think that the reporter does have a moment there, or maybe even an hour there to think, to try to figure out, whoa, what did all these people actually say? When you put it all together, did my premise get borne out? But I don't think they actually really very often do that. I think what happens is they stay with the premise, the idea they had from the outset, and now they take the quotes, they take little bits of those quotes, and they string them together in a way that makes the point that they wanted to make. So, in other words, they could have been more direct and straight with their readers by just writing what they think. But they're not allowed to do that. That's not the way reporting is supposed to work. Instead, what they do is they take the words of other people and they string them together to tell a story. Whether it's the story they wanted to tell or not, let's give them the benefit of the doubt and say, okay, that they're giving you a sort of a slice of the various different experts on this subject, what they think about it, how they determine who gets quoted or not. That's a process we're not privy to. We're not informed about how they make that decision. We also don't know anything about, theoretically, we don't know anything about the reporter's own opinion about this. However, like I said, you know that I don't believe that. I believe you could do a study of stories written by reporters and, you know, ask people, what does the reporter think? And you'd find with a very high degree, accuracy rate that we can actually tell what the reporter thinks, because we're not idiots and we can see how he put it together. Which also, by the way, is one of the biggest problems with journalism, is the assumption that their readers are idiots. Doesn't work too well when the reader isn't an idiot. Or when the reader knows more than you do about it, which does happen. And if you've ever read an article about something like a baseball game that you were at, baseball is different. There are objective facts, and I find the reporting actually there is more accurate, but still doesn't seem like the game you were at, does it? But if they're writing about a technical subject that you're an expert in, yeah, they usually don't get it right, my opinion. But that's what a reporter does. And there's a closing quote. There might be a few statistics in there. They'll go research stuff on the web. I mean, I hope more often, and, you know, I want people to do a good job at this, and, you know, go get the actual literal quote off the person's blog would be great. And link to the blog So I can go read the whole story if I don't think the soundbite told me as much as I needed to know or wanted to know. Okay, so if that's what a reporter does, right? In other words, it's a reporter is a distiller of points of view. I think that's really all you can say that a reporter does, right? Then, yeah, we can do what a reporter does, but we can do it for ourselves. In other words, if I want to get if I want to understand an economic issue, I'm going to go to Paul Krugman. I mean, basically, he's my teacher. He's the guy I trust. I think Paul Krugman is a scientist. I think that he would tell me if he was wrong about something. I know he'll tell me if the people he disagrees with are wrong. And I find, for the most part, that his reasoning is very convincing. If I were a reporter, which I am not, and I don't want to be, but if I were, and there was an economic story, I probably just would call Paul Krugman all the time. Maybe I would ask him, who else should I talk to? And by the way, he does tell me who else to talk to. I would also talk to Ezra Klein. Ezra Klein, I find, is a very good writer. I didn't understand at first that he has some background in economics. I think he does. I'm not sure exactly how. But I find that he links me to a lot of economists, and so that's useful. In tech, I have a large number of people who I consider authoritative, whose opinions I trust, and who I will read to, you know, if I wanted to find out what actually happened with something, which, you know, you might think that I would always refer just to myself, but that would be ridiculous. Nobody can understand everything, and, you know, it's too big a world, even in the world that, you know, I have developed an expertise in. So I'm always looking to other people for their opinions and from their points of view. If that's what Ingram means, then yes, we will be able to do what reporters do. And that is not the reason why journalism is becoming obsolete, but it certainly helps lessen the pain from journalism becoming obsolete. The reason journalism is becoming obsolete, if you were asking me that question, which I would, finally in the email exchange with Ingram, he got to the point of asking me if I agree with the premise that he led his article off with, and rather than explain why I don't, I just said, no, I don't agree, and I'm thinking to myself, thank God you finally asked me, because a reporter is supposed to do that. Now, he says he's not being a reporter here, fine. But a human being is supposed to ask that. Before you say somebody believes X, don't you think you should, like, have some proof that they actually think that? And if there's any ambiguity to it at all, that you should ask them? Yeah, of course you should. Well, I guess that's the point. The reason why... Okay, so I suppose I should say, well, why is it that journalism is becoming obsolete? Because I think journalism was obsolete the day it started. I think it was a very poor compromise for what the problem is. Okay, a compromise that had to be made in the time that it was made because of the technological realities. But it wasn't a good compromise. In other words, why should we have an intermediary that's listening to everybody and then telling us what they think? And further, in the environment that grew up in, there was the sense of superiority or being a gatekeeper is intoxicating. I mean, it's the best way I can explain it. Because they didn't feel a need to be accurate. I know they're going to disagree with that. I know they're going to say that's their whole credo, that's the reason why they exist, but I can show you how that's not true. I mean, you ask a reporter, I mean, this is my canonical example. This is why I started blogging, okay? I was making Mac software. The reporters were writing that there was no new Mac software. However, the reporters were largely using Macs, and they were using the new Mac software. So when I saw them at a party, I said, why do you write that there's no new Mac software? You know, you're using it. Oh, yeah, I know. I love this and that and everything. It's great. I said, well, why do you write that there's no new Mac software? Well, everyone knows there's no new Mac software. And these are smart people. And they don't hear the problem. It's to them, it's not. Because they're reporting conventional wisdom. They're reporting what everybody believes to be true. Whether it actually is true or not does not enter into it. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I always thought, I had always been told that reporters were about telling the truth. And there it was. Absolutely plain, bold. And it wasn't a thing that I could afford to be casual about. Because this is what I was doing for a living. This is what I was doing professionally. If you were making milk, okay, you were a dairy farmer, and the reporters were saying in stories all the time that the milk industry is dead. There's no more milk being produced, and so when the buyers for the grocery stores would go out to buy products, they wouldn't buy any milk because they read in the paper there wasn't any. And you come sell the milk, they say, oh, there must be something wrong with you. Why are you selling milk? Everybody knows there's no milk. So we needed to explode that. And I can't say that I succeeded in exploding it. But in the process of trying to explode it, we exploded journalism instead, which was probably a bigger deal than figuring out how to reboot the Mac software business, which it ended up rebooting itself anyway. Why? I don't know, because sometimes things don't work out and they don't have a happy ending. Sometimes, you know, you end up reinventing whole generations of technology because of this kind of lunacy, you know. That is what's killing journalism. What's killing journalism is that they are not doing what they say they're doing. I think that if journalism were to, like, experience this jolt of awakening and realize, wait a minute, we're not doing what we say we're doing. No. Then we would see a rebirth of journalism. And my last sentence in paragraph 2 would be true. And I'm sure it is true. My last sentence is, it will work differently. One way or another, it will work differently. Because when you've got a gatekeeper, I mean, try to picture, you set up a dam on a river, okay? Like the Mississippi River is a great river because, and for this analogy, because the Mississippi River is always changing course. I mean, it happens slowly, but if you fly over, you know, and it's not just the Mississippi, there are rivers all over the place that do this. Because what happens is they silt up and they form natural dams, and then the river finds that there's an easier way around, and it goes that route, okay? Suppose you built a dam in a place where the river doesn't go anymore. That's what journalism is. If you built a gate, and, you know, you're a gatekeeper, and you've got this gate, and you're standing there guarding the gate, but the river ain't, nobody's walking by the gate, you don't get to collect a toll for people coming through, because nobody wants to go, I'll just go around you. Why would I want to do that anyway? Because as I'm coming through the gate, you pick my pockets, you know, or as I'm coming through the gate, you send me off to some other place that I don't want to go. I mean, you know, however, if you stop being a gatekeeper and start becoming more of a facilitator, if you go back to what got you into journalism in the first place, which if it was a passion for the truth, you're going to be just fine. Because just go back to that. Go back to the passion that you felt for the process of journalism, not the power that you felt because you were the guy that everybody was coming to. That's the gatekeeper. Now, you don't get to be the gatekeeper. That doesn't work. It may work for very small people. I mean, no, Nick Denton thinks, you know, we had this panel discussion last year at NYU, about sources go direct, and he says, oh no, it's just like it used to be, except the gatekeepers are different people. No, it's not just the same as it always was. It's a lot easier to get around the gatekeepers now. So if you have this gate that you set up, it's not going to last very long. Yeah, it lasts a little while, maybe, if you're lucky. Yeah, everybody's coming to Mike Arrington for a while, but you can see that time's over. I mean, it's not going to be the same way it was before. These things are very cyclic, and technology works very, very quickly to get rid of those gates. It's maybe worth investing in if you can put some money aside or whatever, but it is not journalism. It's not what journalism has become. So whatever it is, it's going to work differently. If you really love journalism because it's about, you know, where did I read this? Maybe you guys can help me out. It's like, journalism, you know, people had all these problems with WikiLeaks, right? And I go, man, these guys have lost their way, because that's all journalism is reporting things that people don't want you to report. If they want you to report it, it's going to be a press release. You're not going to have to work to do that. I don't need a journalist to find out something about a person that they want you to know. However, if it's something that they don't want you to know, then somebody's going to have to go digging for it, and somebody's going to have to stick their neck out. You want to be a reporter, you're going to get that experience, that feeling of being at risk. And I don't think very many reporters do that. And I don't think that's journalism if you're not doing it. So, anyway. There are no simple answers to this. And to summarize my thought as being that, you know, the reason why journalism is obsolete is that anyone can do it is just ridiculously wrong and an oversimplification, and frankly is disrespectful. Having spent basically a whole career working on this stuff, and I'm not a spring chicken, you know, and I'm not stupid, I don't think. No idea that simple would be right. It is not right. It's much more complicated. Journalism is obsolete because the way they practice journalism only worked when you had exclusivity, and you don't have it anymore. That's what happened. Doesn't mean that you can't find a way to participate in the truth-getting, but it is not going to work the way it worked in the past. And I don't mean that in a superficial way. I don't mean that it's not going to work like the way it worked in the past because you're transporting bits instead of paper. No. You're going to do something fundamentally different from what you did before. But the if you want to, you may not even get paid for it. Who knows? I don't know. Just know it's going to be different. And the way you did it in the past is not magically going to return, because things don't work that way. Two more generations, they won't remember what journalism was, what you think journalism was. That might be, if somebody goes to watch the Front Page movie, there were, I guess, two incarnations of that. They might say, oh, that looks really interesting. What were they doing there again? Moving around news before the net. I wonder how that worked. Anyway, how long have we been doing this? 28 minutes. Good time to quit. All right, everybody, thanks so much for listening. I don't remember. This is 15 or 16, Davecast, whatever. And it's September 3rd, 2011. See y'all later. Bye.